Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning. This is Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. I'm in the studio today with my partner, Sean Garner. We've got Tom Sparks, like always, adding his great commentary. We've got Cody Beeson running the boards and pitching in every once in a while. And this is a great holiday. I hope you guys are safe out there as you celebrate Memorial Day today. We're going to get right into it because we got a lot to talk about today. I ran across this clip from Jesse Waters last week. This was last Tuesday, I believe it was. But this is some new information that came out from the documents case, the Trump documents case. You boys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and how it's kind of just like indefinitely on hold. Because it came out that after they raided Mar-a-Lago, the FBI agents staged documents and took pictures of them with, like, fake, what do you call that? Classified. Did you hear about this?
They staged it.
Yeah, they put classified cover sheets on them and stuff, and they weren't classified documents. And then they mishandled these documents, you know, and that's what they're charging Trump with. Right. Is mishandling classified documents, and they lost stuff, they moved it, they rearranged it. So the judge is like, what is going on? Once she found out about that, she's like, this is not smell right. And so she's indefinitely put it on hold for a little while. But more information has come out, and it's going to be pretty interesting. So Jesse Waters talks about that. I'm going to play that clip right now. Very interesting, and then I'll get your take on it.
Fox News alert, a major bombshell in the Trump documents case. The FBI authorized the use of deadly force during the Mar-a-Lago raid. This according to documents filed by Trump's legal team. Agents in unmarked polo shirts planned to bring standard issue weapons, ammo, handcuffs, medium and large size bolt cutters, and even lock picking equipment as they prepared to go door to door at Mar-a-Lago. And they did. Ransacking Melania Trump's bedroom, along with Barron Trump's bedroom. The FBI also took extensive photographs of Melania and Barron's rooms for no apparent reason. Think about this for a second. Joe Biden sent men with guns to his political opponent's house and turned their bedrooms upside down. That's never happened in the history of the United States. And we've had some crazy presidents. This was the former first lady and a professional model. These people are sick. And Biden complains about his son's privacy, Hunter's. He had armed men rummage through Barron's bedroom. The FBI even allegedly had a medic on site in case someone was shot. Trump reacting, quote, wow, I just came out of the Biden witch hunt trial in Manhattan, the icebox, and was shown reports that crooked Joe Biden's DOJ and their illegal and unconstitutional raid of Mar-a-Lago authorized the FBI to use deadly, lethal force. Now we know for sure that Joe Biden's a serious threat to democracy. He is mentally unfit to hold office, 25th Amendment. Trump's lawyers claim that the former president's constitutional rights were violated. It was an illegal search and seizure. The FBI misled the judge to obtain the warrant, and the raid was executed in an egregious fashion and in bad faith. Nor was there any basis for the FBI to bring firearms into Mar-a-Lago. What was life-threatening about pieces of paper? The FBI improperly seized Trump's passports, tax and accounting information, and even medical records. Think about that. The Biden administration seized his political opponent's medical records. Who signed off on it?
I personally approved the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. Second, the department does not take such a decision lightly.
Remember, the New York Times reported that Biden wanted his AG to, quote, act less like a ponderous judge and more like a prosecutor willing to take on Trump. This all came from the top, just like the Jan 6 case, the Fannie case, Alvin Bragg's workshop in Manhattan, where today both sides rested.
So what do you guys think about that use of force when raiding Mar-a-Lago to get supposed classified documents? What do you think about that, Tom?
Well, I don't like the idea of a political opponent or
you know, a sitting president using a DOJ arm to investigate a political opponent, which seems like as the more information's coming out, it seems like it was more and more unnecessary and more that they had to bring either falsify evidence or makes things seem worse than they actually were in reality to even get the initial case to stick. Using lethal force doesn't shock my conscience. Like the FBI is always carrying weapons. So the fact that they were authorized to use lethal force, I mean, they're always authorized to use lethal force if the threat arises. So it just seems to me like I'm not really, biting on that buzz line as much, though.
I'm more familiar with that lethal force use in the ATF context. Obviously, when they do these, middle of the morning, we're talking 3 o'clock in the morning, no-knock warrants into your house to find supposed illegal weapons or caches of ammo or something that you're not allowed or for some reason you're not supposed to be using. The ATF is known to do that, and oftentimes that results in death on behalf of the ATF and that person that they're raiding, because obviously when you get awoken at 3 o'clock in the morning and people come in with guns yelling and screaming and shocking you out of bed, you're going to react, right? I mean, that's the point. But they're, on their side of things, on the government side of things, they don't want to, they want as much peacefulness as possible. So their idea is, and they don't want the destruction of evidence. I think that's what the argument is on the government side. So them going into Mar-a-Lago armed and dangerous, ready to shoot to kill, and having a medic on site, like you said, is pretty much par for the course for an administrative agency like this and an executive branch agency, because when there is a likelihood that evidence can be destroyed, they would need to get in there, secure that evidence before it can be destroyed, even using deadly force sometimes. I don't quite go to the idea that, okay, we need deadly force in this scenario because there was no threat. A paper can't kill you. Mm-hmm. A piece of paper can't kill you. A gun can. So in the ATF situation where they use that as an excuse, I kind of get it, because they're supposedly coming into an environment where this person has allegedly arms that they could use in retaliation against you as a person invading your home. And so that usually gets the judge to sign off on that no-knock warrant. When it comes to documents, I don't know. I mean, what are you going to do? Throw some paper?
Yeah. I don't think it's so much for me, like, the actual evidence is not deadly, but people can always be deadly. So if the reasoning is I'm going into somebody's home where they do not want me to be, the chances are somebody could be deadly, not necessarily something. But I think the part that bothers me more is the unmarked uniforms and the not as much transparency. It makes it look like a secret op, which I think is something that it makes the whole situation look even worse than it is.
Well, number one, though, in that context, you're saying, someone could be dangerous. We know who could have been there. It's either Trump himself, who's pushing 80, mm-hmm. not really much of a threat, I wouldn't think, physically, to an agent. Number two, Melania, a dainty woman. Not to say that she couldn't hold her own, but at the same time, it's like not really what I would consider a threat to FBI agents. And finally, Barron, if Barron was home. Not only that, but number two here, President Trump has assigned for the rest of his life security detail. Mm-hmm. He has Secret Service. So how does that play into everything? You have the FBI coming in. They obviously knew he wasn't going to be there. I mean, they would have to really coordinate this, I would think, because he travels with and he has around him all the time armed guards for the rest of his life. So how do you work that in? And even if he goes to prison, like, how does that work? And we've talked about, I think, before, Sean, you'd mentioned, well, if he goes to prison in one of these criminal actions, do you forfeit that security detail? I mean, he has a right to it for the rest of his life, or do they just hang out with him in the cell?
Well, right. Those are all really interesting questions, and we're in uncharted waters at this point because we've never seen this type of thing happen before. So, Thomas, to your point, I'm actually really surprised at how casual you're taking all of this, because, Adam,
you're the worst, Tom.
Well,
I'm used to it.
Adam's that's what he's saying. Obvious, right? It's like, how dangerous did they expect this to be? It's not as if they've never been there. It's not as if they don't know what the landscape looks like or the people are going, who they're going to be. The people that they are going to actually be interacting with, we trusted to lead the country just 6 months earlier. So,
and they most likely know each other. Like these people, it's the swamp. Trained,
yes, these people, well, the FBI, the Secret Service, when they get to these elite levels, oftentimes they know each other because of the training that they've gone through to get to these levels of position that they're in. And so they know who they are and what an escalation of events looks like. And they've been to Trump's house 3-4 times prior to this happening. They've negotiated with Trump. They've gotten many boxes from him. I think it was something like 15 boxes prior to this raid they'd already gotten from Trump, mm-hmm. just asking for them. And then they told him the other boxes he needed to put in a more secure location, which he did. He put under lock and key. And then they went on and said, okay, we want them. I think he had some, I don't know the specifics as to why he didn't turn them over beforehand, but he didn't. And they served the search warrant on him, but doing it in the night and doing it with, you know, guns as if they're going to go into like some drug cartel and it's going to be an all-out firefight, that was weird. That was really weird. And everybody saw that that was weird and complained about it at the time. And now we're getting more into the warrant. Why would you specifically authorize the use of lethal force when there's no situation that I can imagine that there is going to end up in a battle between the Secret Service and the FBI, let alone the Trump family and the FBI? I can't imagine any scenario that it happened. And if it had happened or had a possibility of happening, you are looking at some major backlash from the population, from the people. And would that be justifiable? I mean, they talk about a civil war. And, you know, we're getting so divided among each other with the party's division getting deeper and deeper now more than ever before. If you want to create a civil war, go kill the president that was one of the most popular presidents in recent history in a search warrant for some papers that they've yet to demonstrate have any value whatsoever to national security. That's a good way to start a civil war.
Sure. If they would have been shot at, would you expect them to return fire?
Yeah.
If they would have been shot at, if you really want to be a peaceful, law-abiding government, the president in this case and the attorney general, the instruction should be, listen, if they shoot at you, pull back, get out of there. It's not worth it at this point. He's had the papers already for a year and a half. If the information is going to be disclosed, it's gone.
Yeah, I don't know if that's realistic, though. Like, in a scenario where somebody shoots at you, you don't have time to just pull back. Like, you're going to, I know this is like maybe a little bit of a military like take, but like you're taught from like, I'm sure a lot of Secret Service and FBI have military training. The best medicine in the battlefield is overwhelming suppressing fire. And that's what we're always taught.
Because you have to achieve an objective that in oftentimes is the case with military, you're in hostile territory. Right,
sure.
That you've got it warrants you going in there with guns in the first place, and getting at that objective, whether it's obtaining some territory or liberating some people or whatever that might be. But in this case, we're talking about paper that's been in the president's possession for a year and a half.
Right.
What is justifying the FBI firing back at the Secret Service?
Well, no, I think we're talking about two different scenarios here. I think what I hear you to say is your argument is they shouldn't be there in the first place.
No, I think they could have been there with a warrant. I don't know that they needed to be there in the middle of the night.
Sure, I can agree with that.
At no point do I see they need to go in there and say, hey, if anybody starts you know, shooting, it's going to be all at war. We're getting those boxes no matter what.
Yeah, I don't think that it needs to be we're getting the boxes no matter what. But if you're there executing a warrant and someone does start shooting you, it doesn't shock my conscience that a judge says you can use lethal force if you have to.
Well, why would the judge even have to say that in the first place? Isn't that already presumed?
Yeah.
If somebody shoots at you, the fact that the FBI had guns, I think, is automatically assumed by everybody. The FBI doesn't go anywhere without guns.
Yeah, that's just why I think it's redundant in the search warrant that they even say that.
Well, I think, and that is the part that shocks the conscience, is that they specifically went out to put that in there because they're imagining some scenario where maybe we just eliminate a political opponent.
Sure. Yeah, and if that's the case, obviously that's a terrible crime.
In that clip that you heard, Jesse Waters used the phrase, Biden did this, Biden did that. How close do you think Biden was to this actually happening? You heard the statement from Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland, the attorney general, he authorized this. He authorized that warrant. And so do you think, is Biden even connected to this? I understand why Jesse was using those, I would say it's incendiary. He's saying Biden directly did this. But did Biden directly do this? That's number one. Number two, I understand.
Think Biden's directly doing anything.
Yeah.
But,
well,
okay,
this is a while back.
That answers that question. Well, I mean, it's not like he just lost his senses in the past year.
I think what he's saying is Biden is the executive branch. The FBI is the executive branch. These administrations are authorized by the President of the United States. And so by proxy, Biden did this, I think is what Jesse is saying. But
okay, and I'm with you there. So the Biden administration did this. Like,
yeah.
The big guy, Joe Biden, he's not doing a whole lot of anything. But the Biden administration did this, yes. And the FBI is in cahoots with the Biden administration. Merrick Garland did this.
We got to go to break. We'll be right back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. We've got Sean Garner. We've got Tom Sparks. And we've got Cody Beeson with us today. Again, happy Memorial Day. We hope it's safe for you and you're not visiting the hospital. There's a lot of boating going on outside at the lakes, and just be careful at the river and things like that. Last segment, we talked a lot about this new information that came out about the FBI's use of deadly force when they raided Mar-a-Lago in the middle of the night. We're going to jump gears now because last week, it was last Tuesday, was the other Trump trial up in New York, everybody's calling the hush money case. And the defense rested in that case. They put on, I think, maybe one witness. They wanted to put on more, but the judge wouldn't allow it, from my understanding. So the witness that they did put on was the former attorney of Cohen, which went on to say that this guy's a liar. He's lying. He told me at the time that Trump had no idea what was, you know, he had nothing on Trump, that kind of stuff. The other witness that they were going to put on was an expert on federal election law, who could come in and say, even if it was a hush money case, it doesn't violate, it has nothing to do with election law.
Yeah.
So there's no violations here. But the judge would not allow that. He thought it would, I don't know, prejudice the jury, I guess. I don't know.
It's really interesting to hear, like, Jake Tapper from CNN. He's as far left as you get and still be part of the mainstream media, which, not me saying much, but he's called Trump Hitler on various occasions. And so he really dislikes Trump. But when Michael Cohen's testimony comes out as to how much he hates Trump and how revenge is best served cold and this is his opportunity to get back at Trump and how he felt belittled by Trump with the bonuses that he was receiving and so therefore he was skimming off the top and he... $60,000 was stolen directly by him from Trump just in a small bit of testimony that he gave. And they're like, wow, well, that's theft right there. That in and of itself is a bigger crime than what Trump is being tried for. Yet they don't care about Michael Cohen. They don't. In fact, it's hard to imagine a scenario where if your name is not Trump, you're ever going to be tried for the crimes allegedly that he's being tried for. And this is Jake Tapper saying this. And he's kind of saying that and he's talking out loud. And you can see this is real, like, journalistic pondering going on, but it's on air. And it's like, are you guys just now getting this? Were you so disillusioned and so drunk on your hatred with Trump that you could not see what was going on? That really this was a witch hunt from the beginning? They don't care about all the other bad actors around Trump that they're getting to act as witnesses against him. They only care about suppressing Trump. Had Trump not announced for to become the president for his election campaign again, there's no way any of these crimes would have been brought against him. That in and of itself is, I think, de facto evidence that this is a political prosecution. If you're not going to prosecute the individual absent his running for office, then the reason you're prosecuting him is for political means.
So the larceny claim of Cohen, well, he admitted to larceny. He stole about $60,000 from the Trump administration. That information was known to prosecutors, and this DOJ, the government entity there in New York for probably a year and a half, and they did nothing about it. And so now there's ethical violations that they're in jeopardy of. Knowing that this crime happened and they didn't prosecute it, that they're in big, big trouble. And a lot of people are saying that when this wraps up, I mean, it's kind of going to come crashing down on Alvin Bragg and his team of prosecutors there in New York. Having said that, the defense rested last week on Tuesday. The judge gave instructions to the jury, go home, don't watch the news, don't look anything into this case. We're coming back a week from today, which will be tomorrow. They're going to come back, and he'll give the jury specific instructions. Everything's kind of in that judge's hands now. What instructions is he going to give? He could give them instructions such that you can't accept this testimony, you can't accept this, you have to believe this, you have to believe that. So it can be very specific. He can really direct whatever he wants in that jury instruction. We'll see tomorrow how that plays out. But do you think there's a chance that it'll be a unanimous jury verdict, or do you think that there'll be one juror out of some that says this just is not proven beyond a reasonable doubt that this was a violation of election laws, or that this even happened at all? What do you think is going to happen? You have any predictions for tomorrow?
It'll be split vote. There'll be some that are so far drunk on that hatred that we were talking about that they're going to convict no matter what. And then I think there'll be a few that see what I believe is reason and not convict.
They say there's two attorneys on that jury. Do you think that makes a difference?
I'm really surprised when I heard that because I've been called for jury duty probably half a dozen times, and I get dismissed right off the bat when they learn that I'm an attorney. And the reason why is because As a juror, you're expected to be biased. You're not expected to apply your own understanding of the law. You're expected to apply the judge's instructions and then the evidence that's presented by the prosecution and the defense. That's it. And attorneys are trained to do the opposite. They're trained to look for what isn't obviously presented to you. And so they're trained to do exactly the opposite of what jurors are instructed to do, and that is vacate everything that you've got, every bias that you have in your head, only accept what we're delivering to you in by way of evidence that we're delivering and the instructions from the judge. Attorneys are wired differently. They're trained differently. They should have been taken off that jury right off the bat. I don't know why either side didn't get rid of them. There must be some reason, and obviously they're doing strategically playing their cards to have them on there. I just don't understand it.
In addition to that, they're highly skilled at arguing and convincing people. And,
correct.
And there are safeguards in our society against attorneys doing that because of the way that they're trained.
For example, Adam, we're not allowed to walk up to an individual and propose our services in person. That is actually a violation of our ethics. We can be disbarred for doing that. That's how much the legal system understands that attorneys are trained to be persuasive. We can advertise, and that's actually only in the past 30 years that attorneys have been legally allowed to advertise because they thought it was unethical to advertise, but they limited that to advertising, through not real-time interaction. You couldn't call somebody and advertise your services to them, or you couldn't approach them at the scene of an accident, or even after the fact when they're walking out of the courthouse personally. You can't personally interact with any individual because you're persuasive and you're trained to be that way. So why an attorney would be allowed to be on the jury, I don't know whose side. They both must have agreed to allow this to happen because in voir dire, that's what happens, but I don't know why they are.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine a situation where those attorneys aren't dictating what's going to happen, And it could be good, it could be bad, it could be all for the prosecution or it could be all for Trump. So it's really, I don't know. I don't know who picked them they both had to allow them, on there. But I could see, I really, in my mind's eye, I'm assuming those attorneys are going to dictate what happens.
There's a good chance. I think, like you said, attorneys are uniquely situated to be able to remove the emotion that a lot of times builds up a case where, if an attorney, from my perspective, looked at this case on its face and was only applying the law, I think it'd be pretty cut and dry. I wouldn't get very far, wouldn't take me very long to deliberate at all. But if you get an attorney who has a different motive, then I can easily see how that could be.
And you would like to think that all attorneys are ethical, right? Mm-hmm. But now this trial is kind of showing that's not to be the case. When you have a prosecutor and his team that sat on larceny evidence and are really pushing this through, and there was a lot of stuff. The attorney that the Trump administration had, Cohen's attorney that they had on the stand last Tuesday, well, Monday and Tuesday for the defense, he gave direct evidence that Cohen was lying, that Trump had no idea what was going on. Had he had an idea of what was going on, he wouldn't have paid Cohen that money, which he embezzled.
Right.
So it's like...
And you to just pay him in a brown paper sack with cash.
Yeah, So it's just Cohen just gave direct evidence that Trump didn't know what he was paying for. He's just paying for legal services that he was billed for, or else why would he give voluntarily $60,000 to Cohen? He didn't know.
We run a small legal business, and we sign, a half dozen checks a day. Adam, how many checks a day do you sign?
I think that's probably accurate, yeah. I think that's pretty accurate.
Individually, each of us have check signing authority. And I sign about a half dozen. You sign about a half dozen.
Absolutely.
And we trust the people that we have around us to say, hey, this is for the Superior Court judge. This is for paying out a beneficiary that we've already worked out the probate for, and we're going to distribute the assets to it. And we don't have time. Nothing would ever get done if we sat down and investigated every single penny of every check that was written out. We've done it throughout the case with our paralegals, but when the paralegal presents the check that this is the amount, we sign it. And every business owner knows that happens, that you work with the bookkeepers and the professionals around you to determine the amounts and who is owed what.
That's a common business practice. I mean, it's not like we don't know what's going on. I don't want our listeners to think like, oh, we're just signing blank checks here and there. What will happen is on a given day, they'll come into my office or Sean's office, or they'll say, hey, we've got some checks for you to sign. They'll usually wait till there's a stack of checks for us to sign, and every check has it behind it. So you'll have the check that we need to sign, and behind it, it has the evidence of what that's for. So the carbon copy, let's say, and then it has a place where, so we'll sign the check and then we initial the back piece of paper, which says this is where this money is going and for why. And so we just flip through that, so we can see really quickly where the money's going. We're just trusting those paralegals, and we're accustomed to the fees that we're being charged as well. A lot of these things are court fees that we're paying. So when we see a fee for the court, we know it's going to be around $375 for filing fees.
We know, but some of those are tens of thousands of dollars to beneficiaries of cases that we know we've been working on,
That's
and
right.
We know that they are at the point of settlement, we know we've worked out the dollar amounts throughout the process, but at the point that the check lands on our desk, we sign it with confidence that the people around us are not trying to pull a fast one. We don't have to go back through the entire case every time we sign the check, is what I'm saying.
So how can you prove that what was presented, you know, by counsel was what it was? I mean, how can they prove that, you know, he wasn't misled?
It would have to be delineated on a piece of paper somewhere.
And that's exactly, Cody, you hit the nail on the head. That's with the limited amount of time that they gave the defense, they proved that Michael Cohen, number one, not only was capable of lying, motivated of lying, had a past history of lying, but he actually did it for his own gain, his own financial gain, and he had this revenge, this vendetta against Donald Trump to continue to lie and to gain from this, whether it's seeing Donald Trump taken down or whether it's to get some more popularity or whether it's to actually just steal a couple $60,000. Now, $60,000, I guarantee that's only the tip of the iceberg. If that's what they found in a small amount of testimony, then there was a lot more money that got stolen out there. So, Cody, back to your question, when they saw the paperwork and they saw that he stole this, that demonstrates right then and there that he's trying to push money through Trump without him understanding what actually where it's going.
And Trump had already admitted, you know, he pays legal fees all the time. You know, he has Cohen's not the only attorney that he used. And so when he sees a legal charge, he pays his bills. Like he said, it's very unlikely that he knew the delineated costs. And so where they tried to get him, my understanding is where we're going to be in like private conversations that Trump had knowledge of. He was paying this money to Cohen as a straw man that would pay Stormy Daniels, but it really wasn't, it wasn't convincing because it sounded like it never happened, or Trump still didn't have any knowledge of what he was actually doing.
And I want to get back to really the hush money seems to be the crime. That isn't the crime. It's not a crime to pay somebody to not say something disparaging against your family or you, whether or not it's true
or not.
Right. Where the crime is to blackmail an individual and accept payment not to say the money or not to say the thing that is damning or going to hurt your reputation. That is the crime. This happened with Rick Pitino. Remember Rick Pitino? He was the head coach of Louisville, a basketball team, and he had an affair with this lady, and this lady said, hey, you know, you got to pay me off, otherwise I'm going to go and tell the media, and I'm going to tell your wife and everybody else. And he's like, I ain't paying you off. You're not going to blackmail me. And so she did. She went to the media, and she exposed him, and everybody jumped on that and said, listen, you entered into the affair voluntarily. Now you're going to blackmail this guy. That's a crime. And she got prosecuted for it. And everybody thought this was a wonderful thing because this lady was trying to take down this figurehead by allowing whatever, the seduction, whoever did the seducing, went back and forth and then use it for her monetary gain. And people were like, that's illegal. You shouldn't be able to do that. And she was prosecuted for it. And Rick Pitino, yeah. He's an immoral guy. I don't think anybody had any question about that. But she was a criminal, and that's the difference. In this case, is Donald Trump immoral? I believe he probably is. Is he capable of sleeping with Stormy Daniels? I don't see that he's not, but I don't see how that, in this particular case, makes him a criminal, but Stormy Daniels, for extorting him and blackmailing him, is a criminal, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just need to watch the hit Broadway Hamilton. I mean, it's not like it hasn't been done before.
Right.
Alexander Hamilton
right.
did the exact same thing.
He did the exact same thing.
Yeah, and he was promoted to the Treasury.
Well, and it impeached his character, for sure, but he wasn't thrown in prison for it. And that's what they're trying to do to Trump. They're trying to throw him into prison for it.
In New York, Hamilton was. This happened in New York, upstate or not upstate New York, but downtown New York.
Yeah, so that's a good. That's a good. Yeah, parallel there.
All right, we got to go to break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law. Right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is Life, Death, and the Law. I'm attorney Adam Hanson. We've got Sean Garner, Tom Sparks, and Cody in the studio today, and we've been talking a lot about Trump. I know you've heard a lot about what's going on here, and you're probably like, I'm sick of that. But we have been fascinated lately of the legal aspects of what's going on with him, because we live in that world. We practice in that world every day as attorneys. And so this really, it brings in the question, are these prosecutors in New York or in Georgia or in Florida, are they abiding by the law? Is this constitutional? And we're constantly asking those questions. We talked last segment a lot about the Alvin Bragg New York case that is going to kick off again tomorrow. On Tuesday, the jury is going to come back in, and the judge in that case is going to give them specific instructions, and then they're going to deliberate and decide whether Trump is guilty of, we don't know what's the charge yet, but we'll find that out, I guess, tomorrow. And when this all went down last week on Tuesday, the defense rested. The judge said, okay, we're going to take a break. We'll come back next Tuesday, a week later. Don't watch the news. Don't look up this case. Don't get into it. You can't have any other exterior information about this case. How does that work? Like, is that possible? I don't know about you, but on my phone, every 5 minutes, there's a news article coming up, an alert about this particular case and somebody's take on that. Is that likely that the number one, that the jury is going to be able to shield their life from the media onslaught that they're going to endure this last week until tomorrow, Tuesday? Number one. Number two, why the delay? Why not just say, okay, we'll come back tomorrow? This would have been last Wednesday. And you give the jury instructions, they deliberate, and it's over. Why did you wait a week? That was really weird to me that the judge would do that.
Well, and so I haven't actually been in a jury, again, because I'm an attorney, and I keep getting cast out every time that I go through voir dire.
Cast out.
I don't know. What is the legal term for being dismissed?
Dismissed.
Rejected.
Yes. Anyway.
Ejected.
Rejected.
Yeah.
Ridiculed.
They tell me to get out of there. And I do. Gladly.
You're like, thank you.
No,
don't let them hear you say that.
No. In some cases, I'd be interested to sit down and see how the whole process works from the inside out. I've seen it from books and from movies and studying the process. I've never actually participated in it. But either way, my understanding is when it's this highly sensitive of an issue and a high-profile case, the jury is sequestered, meaning they're excluded from the rest of the public and the newspaper and the media because they don't want any outside information to go in and clutter the evidence that is what they should be considering, the only thing they should be considering in determining whether or not the crime has been committed. And also the judge's instruction on how and what weight to give that evidence. And so to send them home on this, it's almost as if it's like, okay, I'm going to send you home. What type of media is more prevalent out there? That if for example, I just want to bring in an analogy here. You don't want to learn the score of the NBA Finals because you've recorded it. And you want to watch it on your own, and you want to be surprised. But there's so many people out there talking about it. The media is constantly talking about it. It's just like, I've tried this before with football games and basketball games. It's like you got to run around screaming with your fingers in your ears because it's everybody's buzzing about it.
This just happened. I remember you bring that up. I thought you were talking about me because this just happened a couple weeks ago. I think it was the girls NCAA.
Yeah, it was. Stuff. I wanted to watch it myself.
Yeah, and I was like, man, I can't believe they won. Blah, blah, blah. You're like, oh, thanks. I haven't watched it yet. I was waiting to watch it. He like had it recorded.
Yeah.
I felt like the biggest idiot. But actually, it was your fault. Like, you should not do that.
Well, and that's the point, right? We should not do that. We should not wait and prolong the decision or determine whether or not these people can remain totally excluded from society until Tuesday. Why? What is the potential motivation for this instruction? Thomas, what's your take on that?
Potential motivation could be, you know, dragging it out so people forget about the bad day that the last witness had in court. It could be people trying to get at jury members to either intimidate or to
We've all seen those movies where, you know, outside forces intimidate jury members or bribe them for certain votes on the jury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I had to guess, my first guess would be the prosecution had a very bad day in court very recently, and they want to let that cool off before a jury makes its final decision.
But at the same time, so my first inclination is, as a judge, I don't want time. I don't want time to lapse where they go back into the world and be on this onslaught of media that's going to tell them what they should decide.
Yeah.
Number one. Number two.
And the mainstream media is what they're most likely to get exposed to, like, unless they're actively searching it, because mainstream media is out there everywhere. It's on every headline. It's on every radio show. It's, if you turn on the TV, it's going to be there. So, I mean, are you going to sit in a quiet room with no newspaper? Is that what he's expecting?
Yeah, I think, to your point, that's what an impartial and reasonable judge would want. But I don't... I've seen some things from this judge in this case where it leads me to believe that they're not completely impartial.
Yeah, it's not like these jurors have, like, cabins out there with no Wi-Fi service that they can go retreat to. They're going back to their city homes.
But at the same time, if this judge is wanting a conviction here, and that is his sole motivation, which kind of it looks like that until up to now. So now you're giving him a week, because why do I say that? Number two, going back to what I was saying, is the potential of them being gotten to by a bad actor to bribe them or to sway them will ruin the case. So to me, it's just stupidity on behalf of the judge. If you want Trump to be prosecuted, you need to go to jury right now while this is fresh and they can't be gotten to.
Okay.
Because if they are, the whole thing's out.
So those are all the bad reasons. What could let's give them the benefit of the doubt. What could be a good reason?
Rest your brain. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. Being nice. Go have a good... We've been in this for six weeks.
It's not nice to keep you beholden to the court.
Well, we've got you in here for 6 weeks in this ice box, as Trump calls it, in this courtroom. Go have a vacation. Go for Memorial Day and come back on Tuesday.
I'm not on vacation if my job is to come back to court on Tuesday and pass down a verdict that is going to make history.
And I can't look at my phone. I can't be on my phone. I can't be browsing the channels.
That's not vacation.
Like, because if they do that and it comes out, the case is over. Like, it gets thrown out. It's the jury's now tainted, and we've got to start all over again.
Yeah, I think it's
maybe that is the play. Maybe it is a play such that the jury gets tainted, and now we got to go right back into it and do it again, which would delay Trump's ability to get back on the campaign trail.
Which the timing of this, I think, is a good point. All of this happened when 2016. This happened in 2016. Why are we waiting now, right? Isn't that when this allegedly happened? Was it 2016 or 2020?
16, yeah.
2016 election. We're waiting to do it on the eve of the election that he's actually a candidate for president in to actually prosecute this alleged crime.
Eight years later.
And all of these prosecutions are just coincidentally occurring at the same time, right at the pinnacle of campaigning season. And I've heard CNN and I've heard MSNBC explain the timeline and how, no, this is just a natural progression of criminal cases. And it isn't. When somebody commits a crime and the prosecution exercises their discretion, because prosecutors do have discretion whether or not to push charges and actually move forward with the case. They do it when the evidence is still there and fresh and the memories of the witnesses is still pretty clean and they can provide testimony. The timing of all of these cases happened coincidentally right now. I think we have to take in consideration in determining the judge's decision to continue to postpone the juror's final verdict.
See, that was my thought, is it pushes it into another media cycle, pushes it another week, and it just makes it look bad again.
Yeah, because as long as you can, and I think this is a failed, if this is a campaign tactic, it's shown again and again that it's a failed tactic, that the more prosecution that the Biden administration or any of their cronies, and we all know that these individuals are conversing with the Biden administration directly to bring these charges. The more charges that are brought against him, the more emboldened the base of Trump gets, the more support, because the little guys don't like to be pushed down by the government. I think that's in our blood as Americans. We don't like the government telling us what to do. You know, Adam, you and I were in Boston just a couple of weeks ago, and we went to the place where the Boston Tea Party took place. And the whole story of it was there were a lot of taxes. The Stamp Act was one of them that was imposed on the colonies. And the whole issue was they didn't like the tax without them having input on the actual amount of the tax or what it was being or what the item was being taxed. Taxation without representation. That was the issue. So the king said, fine, I'm going to rescind all these taxes except on the tea, and it's only going to be a small amount. And it was on pretty crappy tea, too. And so the colonists, the revolutionists, they said, no, this is a moral thing. We're not taking this tea. We're not getting it shoved down our throat. We don't like being told what to do by the government. And that has been the American spirit from the beginning, that we don't like it when the government tries to push something on us, regardless of how small or insignificant it might apply directly in our lives. We like to apply our own judgment as to how we carry out our day-to-day endeavors. And so King, take this tea and shove it, right? And that's what happened. And I think that's what's happening with the Donald Trump base. Is a lot of us, me in particular, I don't like Donald Trump's character. I don't like him as an individual. I can't stand listening to him speak. Am I going to vote for him? Heck yeah, because I'm sick and tired of the government prosecuting an opponent just for political purposes.
Absolutely, and I think that is the sentiment of America right now. And it's like scary to the Biden administration. Obviously, they're agreeing to these two upcoming debates and things like that to try and mitigate that, but there's just no way. I mean, what's going to happen here when Biden comes out onto that debate stage? Yeah, there's not a crowd because he wouldn't allow it. He wouldn't allow an audience. He's got his media people that he selected that are Trump haters, and they're just going to, you know, lob up softballs and talk about January 6th and all this crap. But everybody can see through that. And once he gets on that stage and fumbles around like he does every day, America's is going to give more fuel to the fire. Nobody likes this guy. Nobody likes this guy. It's unanimous in the United States right now.
Yeah, it's only, do you hate Trump enough to vote for this, you know, walking corpse, or are you going to look forward to what's best for the country?
Absolutely. And so we'll see what's going on. But we're out of time. Have a great Memorial Day. We will talk to you next week. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.